Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
When a mediator works really, really hard and believes in the process and has rolled up her or his sleeves and really is trying to get there, I've seen parties look at me and they don't want me to fail. They're actually working in part so that I succeed. It's incredible.
In the interviews I've conducted up to now for IDN, there was one segment that I now regret having left on the cutting room floor instead of putting it into the podcast. While speaking with Philadelphia-based Ben Picker, which appears as IDN 31, Ben gave his view on what it takes to become a successful mediator. I left this out because, while interesting to me, IDN is about accepting and managing the risk of disputes, not career development. And I think I also felt that this may have been a bit too focused on U.S. practice. Anyway, it took time to sink in for me to realize that what Ben had to say about becoming a great mediator was just as relevant to a party almost anywhere who wants to choose a great mediator in order to obtain a successful outcome to a dispute. And not surprisingly, what came across was a full-time commitment to mediation and a passion for it as a practice. So at the risk of turning this podcast into the Ben Picker Show, this is Ben's third appearance on IDN, here is Ben's advice on how to be successful. We started this discussion at a point when I mentioned some interesting data I'd seen about mediations being concentrated in the hands of just a very few mediators. I asked Ben if he agreed this is the case, and if so, why that is.
It's an intriguing question, Mike. I was at a meeting with, it was actually a meeting of the CPR Diversity Task Force, and the issue there was trying to get more people of color and women into the profession, getting them work as well. And he made the statement, which several people agreed with, that the median number of mediations that are done by the person holding himself or herself out is zero.
The median number is zero.
That more than half the people that would like to do it are getting none, because so many people are out there trying to get it done. Now, it's regional also. In Florida, Texas, and California, many people are getting a lot of work. And for the more garden variety disputes or family law disputes or minor employment disputes, there are many, many people getting work. I think the statement is fairly accurate if you talk about strategic high-dollar disputes. And there you're going to have small groups of people from JAMS to the International Academy or American College or CPR or AAA who have amalgamated some of the best mediators in America, and some doing it on their own. And that would be many, many, many hundreds. And many of them are not getting as much work as they would like, if truth be told, even though they hold them out themselves out as full-time. And in addition to that, there are tens of thousands of people who would like to get more work or even full-time work that aren't getting it. So I think on the whole, it's more true than not. And I think that several things explain it. Not everybody really wants full-time work. I meet all the time with people, former judges, corporate counsel, people at the end of their litigation careers. They're in their 50s or 60s, and they want to do what I do. And I tell them what are the steps they need to take to get a full-time career, because the steps can be taken, and you really can enhance your chances if you take those steps. Many don't want to do it because many who are in the 50s or 60s see it as sort of compatible with semi-retirement. Let's see if I do a few a year. Wouldn't that be great? It can't be done that way. You're not likely to get selected unless you're truly recognized as a highly skilled and experienced person and doing a lot of work. Many of them lose interest. Many of them who would like to do it and do more are busy litigators in major firms, and they get their litigation practice going as well, and that practice takes over their ability to spend more time, and they just don't have the time for it. So there are many reasons that explain it.
So one of the steps, if I understand you right, one of the steps that you have to take is you need to make a commitment. If you want to be a full-time mediator, you got to make a commitment.
You have to make a commitment
to being a full-time mediator.
Exactly. You've got to do it. And in terms of the steps that are to be taken, first of all, I commend a great book that's written by Jeff Krivis, a great mediator out on the West Coast. And it's a book on how to build a mediation practice. And he actually incorporates the experiences of about 25 mediators across America. I'm pleased to have given him the time and to be one of those persons. It's almost color by the numbers. It's not rocket science. One needs to start, no matter how great he or she may have been as a trial lawyer, with a basic 40-hour course. You just can't go out and do it. People think that mediation is, oh, it's intuitive. Anybody can negotiate. That's just not the case. One can do it, but there are a lot of skills to be learned. And a basic training course, whether it's through CPR or some other organization, Michael and Linda Singer, who are now part of JAMS, have a great course. Pepperdine at Strauss. Strauss Institute for Dispute Resolution.
Being qualified to get, you know, I can tell you as a party, and again, practicing internationally, it's often tough to find somebody who can mediate a dispute because everybody get the same problem. Lots of people hold themselves out as mediators, even though they may never have had any experience with mediation. And one of the ways you can distinguish the competent from the completely incompetent. I mean, incompetent in the field of mediation is whether or not the person has taken any courses, you know, outside the U.S. CEDAR and other organizations offer mediation training. I think that's, you know, from a party perspective as well, I'd say that's one of the things we would look for in selection of a mediator is how have they, do they know how to do mediation? What do you see on their CV that indicates mediation basic competencies?
I think that's correct, and yet I don't know that it's as hard as you might suggest because there are some great websites with public information available, and I think I've mentioned some before, but I would include in particular, and in no order, AAA, JAMS, CPR, International Academy, and American College. They all have their mediator profiles, which list with some degree of particularity the experience, the skill, the training. AAA's website, which is transparent, unlike their arbitrator website, you can actually get on and look at these folks, must describe in 5,000 characters what their mediation style and approach is, and you can learn a lot by looking at that. So in addition to just asking around, who do you know, and you're going to do that kind of due diligence as well, there's information available.
Not only that, there is information, but when you are in an international dispute and you want someone maybe who speaks Italian or who speaks French, and there you will find people holding themselves, a lot of them will be international arbitrators who will hold themselves out also as mediators. You don't necessarily know that they have mediation. You may not have access to that same level of information about them. But I agree with you. I agree that
internationally it's a completely different scenario. And more of a challenge.
Yeah, but I do think you're right. I think that there's a trend towards greater transparency and greater availability of information about the people who hold themselves out in these areas.
I think that the person who takes the training then has what is essentially a marketing challenge, not unlike any other. That person has to, first of all, get work, because you get work by getting work. Starting out with even court-appointed mediations and other mediations, taking some at a lesser cost, just making sure you just keep getting the work. And then there's a challenge of marketing that I think one needs to present themselves. One needs to continue to learn, refine their skills, then start writing about it. What's interesting is I started writing 20-some years ago, and people, I think, mistakenly thought, well, maybe he's the expert because he's written about the subject. And of course, the power of any writing is not that people will read the book, but you get the reprints and you can send them out, and then people say he or she is really the expert. So they can write, they can speak, they can get better known. They really need to be at the meetings of the groups that sponsor enhanced skills. One of the great meetings is the American Bar holds a meeting once a year, their annual conference of the dispute resolution section. Usually has 13 tracks going all times for 3 days. And it's a great networking place where you meet others who may make recommendations. And you have to continue to work at it as a marketing challenge as you continue to hone your skills the way you'd work any other marketing challenge, as if you were a litigator in a trial firm trying to get trial work from major corporations. In-house training is a great way to do it. I, in my early years, started being asked to train inside large corporations. I did a program at, are we allowed to mention names here?
Oh, sure.
SBC Communications in San Antonio. And they wanted me to give a meeting of their 300 in-house lawyers once a year. And I talked about the keys to effective negotiating for many hours to that entire group. And I've done that kind of training throughout America.
Well, you know, but maybe that's one of the steps, too, to be a successful mediator, is I think you need to believe in the process. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, that you said that people say that it's because you're from the 60s that you that there's a bit of idealism that
I've
goes
never
with
felt
the belief
that
in mediation.
I was a trial lawyer many decades, and I tried some very substantial cases in the federal and state courts and appeals around the country. But I've never felt, concurrently, I both tried cases and mediated for a period of 20 years, and eventually one practice took over the other. But I've never felt like I've added value more than I have as a mediator. It's just a wonderful feeling at the end of the day when both parties say thank you and they mean it, and you know that you've added value, created value, been part of the process, worked with people collaboratively. It's solved a problem, gotten people out of a situation they really didn't want to be in. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling, and I'm thrilled to also be writing and speaking about it to encourage others to do it, because there's a real opportunity there.
But, you know, I may be speaking out of turn, but at least the mediators that we've used and had experiences with, I think those who've been perhaps most, I would say probably the reason they are very successful is that they really believe in the process. They really believe in mediation. They've got a personal, there is a bit of idealism that goes with that, because they've, I think one great example that we had recently was with a Cedar mediator, Tony Allen. The mediation ended, and Tony didn't give up. I mean, the process, he went on for weeks. I mean, he wanted that case to settle. We were not that far apart, and he just kept it going, and we settled.
I know Tony. I like Tony. There's no one style. There is no one style for being an effective mediator. We talk about facilitative, evaluative, joint sessions, caucus sessions. Everyone has a different style, and one should know going in what the style is. But any mediator who is not saying, I don't give up, is not the mediator you want. The best mediators never, ever give up. Right now, as we speak, and I believe in the process because most of these cases do settle. The overwhelming percentage, we don't quote percentages, but most of them, it's voluntary, not court mandated. And even then, many settle. But I'm involving two groups from a foreign country in the Middle East, and I don't need to mention the country, and they tried to punish each other in the negotiations for not making good enough concessions, and it didn't settle. And right now, as we speak, I'm staying involved. I stay in their face. I tell them I'm going to do it unless they tell me not to. They never tell me not to. And almost all the cases that don't settle at the mediation settle later because of the mediation predicate.
Well, it sounds like these are some.
So yes, I believe in the process.
I believe in the process.
And that having been said, I don't want it out there that I don't believe in the litigation process. There's a time and place for litigation, protecting civil liberties. I think trying criminal cases, getting an injunction if you need it immediately, and the list goes on. Sometimes you need to defend that frivolous case to send a statement to others, and I could give you a long list of cases. And sometimes you need the litigation to get started, to get the discovery that you really, even though discovery is generally overrated, to get some of that discovery you're not going to get on a voluntary basis. Although, keep in mind, in a mediation, you just need enough information to make an intelligent decision. And parties negotiate settlements all the time without litigation or mediation. They just directly, executives meet and settle all the time.
Right.
So you don't need all that information, not really.
Well, great. Just to recap, it sounds like the steps, if someone wants to become a successful mediator, guidance to come from you is, one is, you want to be a full-time mediator, make a commitment to being a full-time mediator.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Second point was, you got to be qualified, get the basics. And that may mean, even if you're 50, 60 years old and you want to become a mediator, go get trained somewhere. Don't just assume that you can do it, but go get some basic qualifications. And I can tell you, by the way, again, speaking internationally, that for a party, seeing that a person has made the commitment and gone through a training program is often a distinguishing factor.
Mm-hmm. But it's more than a credential. Negotiating skills can be learned, and the importance of listening and how to listen empathetic with empathy, and a list that goes on. Understanding negotiating behavior, cognitive illusions, irrational attachments to positions, the advantage of anchoring and adjustment. The list goes on, and you can actually manage and coach in negotiations and be far more effective if you've been trained.
And the third point, marketing. You got to find ways to market yourself, go out there, get work. Bring it in, even if it means that starting out you're going to take work for maybe less than what might make ends meet. You got to get the work
absolutely.
To build the practice.
Now, it's not a bad idea if you're in a law firm to start on a part-time basis and build to a place where you can then have a full-time practice. I don't know that full-time practice can be maintained in the law firm because there are challenges there. But eventually, if you want that full-time practice, get trained, full-time commitment, right. And then go out there, get any work you can get and build on it and build relationships the way you get legal work. That's the way you'll get the mediation work.
Now, you didn't say it, but what I would say is there was a fourth step here. Or it's not really a fourth step, it's a quality. But if you want, you could be, it sounds like you follow the first three steps, you could be a good full-time mediator. But what I think what I'm hearing from you is if you want to be a great mediator, if you want to make the step between a good mediator and a great mediator, you got to believe in the process. And you got to stick with it, not give up. You got to deliver results.
That's what parties want in a mediation. They want right. The mediator to live. Now, it's not always up to the mediator. I tell people I'm a mediator, not a magician. I can't produce this. I need your help. But it's, yes, the mediator that's not getting results is not the mediator that's going to get more work.
So that's that may be, if you want to be a great mediator, it's being a little idealistic, maybe more than a little idealistic, and believing in the process.
You know what happens? When a mediator works really, really hard and believes in the process and has rolled up her or his sleeves and really is trying to get there, I've seen parties look at me and they don't want me to fail. They're actually working in part so that I succeed. It's incredible. You've seen it too, I'm sure.
I was using the telling. You don't want to disappoint the mediator.
Exactly.
You know, and you can see that. They want you to settle, and you want the mediator to be successful too.
And you know what? It's hard work. Yeah. I love the work, but it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I've tried long cases, and I can't tell you a mediation is harder than a month-long trial. But in arbitration, you'll sit and listen. It has its own rigorous challenges. But in a mediation, you have to remember every word that's said. And you are now on a second day, one breach of confidentiality, and the mediation is over. Not only everything said, but what is or isn't confidential. You're on the firing line of a negotiation, not only with the two parties or how many they are, and all those. There's a great grid in a simple two-party negotiation. There are 8 negotiations going on at one time, but one of them is the parties are negotiating with you, and that's fine. They get breaks, you don't. And so we in the mediation community talk about the need for recovery time, because after a two-day mediation, sometimes I'm toast, but I love it.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.